But the man that we wanted to kick off the show with, but we were given an incorrect number for, is the CEO of the Australian Childhood Foundation, who had weighed in to the inquest findings of baby Ebony. We've talked enough about it, but if you have just tuned in, and to put this discussion into context, a four-month-old baby girl had 48 healing fractures when she was found dead at her home, failed by a system designed to protect her. Joe Tucci says we need to ensure it cannot and does not happen again. We need to be absolutely clear on what constitutes cause for serious concern around the safety of children and the resources, support and capability to act to protect them. Now, as a patron of the Australian Childhood Foundation, I wanted to give Joe his opportunity on 5AA this afternoon to chat about that. Joe, we finally got you.
Kim, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry you got the wrong number, but I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah, no, don't apologise to us. I think it's the bloke that we were leaving messages for and text to. How are you going, firstly?
We're good. I'm very good. It's nice to hear you back on radio.
Yeah, well, I need to check on my status as patron now that I've moved from one radio station to another and from one state to another. Is it transferable, Joe?
It's very transferable, Kim. Once you're a patron of the foundation, you're always a patron of the foundation. So we're very glad to keep you on.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. Well, this is your opportunity. Child welfare authorities in two states, New South Wales and South Australia, deservedly have been slammed. You'd agree?
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, the coroner was pretty critical of the system. He found that baby Ebony's death was preventable. I mean, the person who let Ebony down the most was her dad. He ended up causing the injury that led to her death. So we have to be really clear about who's responsible for it, and he's in jail at the moment for that.
Yeah, the charges were downgraded, and I think he's out in 2019.
Well, that's right, Kim. I mean, I think that's the other issue. It's just about how serious the criminal justice system takes, you know, the homicide of children. I think he pled guilty to criminal neglect, which is a far less crime than a homicide-related crime, and I think that in and of itself tells you where children are in the community when they're only getting, you know, someone who ends up causing injuries that kill a child only ends up getting 7 years. To me, that's just not enough.
I totally agree, but is that because he says I was on drugs at the time?
Well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, to me, it doesn't matter what the reasons are for the actions that you've taken as an adult. You've still taken those actions and you should be held accountable for those actions, because children, especially really infants, little babies, they have got no capacity to look after themselves. They rely totally on adults around them to protect them and to keep them safe. And in particular, they're relying on their parents to do that. And if their parents fail them, then their parents, I think, should be held even more accountable because of the duty of care that they have and the position of trust that they're in. So it beggars belief for me around that sentence.
I totally agree. And one thing that my husband and I just couldn't believe, this little girl was 4 months old when she succumbed to all those injuries. I'm not sure at what age she was when she had a broken leg. But at 4 months, a baby is not walking. A baby, unless it's freakishly mobile, is not crawling. At what point, when you take a baby to hospital and it's diagnosed with a broken leg, do alarm bells not go off?
Well, they should go off straight away, Kim. There's really, I mean, as far as I understand it, the broken leg was diagnosed at 5 weeks old. So at 5 weeks old, there was knowledge about her having an injury that I think anyone would find hard to explain, and without an adequate explanation, it's the only option that authorities should take. Is that the only option that the authorities have before them is to remove the child and keep her safe, and then determine what the best course of action is. There's nothing in it to remove a child who has such a serious injury and place that child in foster care whilst other investigations are going on to determine just how that happened. And if that had happened, we would have found out a whole range of other things about that family that would have set the alarm bells off even more and probably led to, you know, some more permanent action being taken for that little girl.
Well, we spoke initially to Rosemary when we kicked off the show, who was a family carer, would never do it again, verging on tears. She was called when this baby was born in the hospital to take care of it, had willingly wanted to open up her home and clearly her heart the moment that she held that baby. In the end, it was argued, and I am praising, that Families SA believed that she was getting in the way of the bonding between the foster family and the birth family. And the result of that was, in the end, she went to that baby's funeral. How does that happen?
Oh, I'm not sure, Kim. I mean, it happens because I think we've confused child protection a lot with what they need to do. I think fundamentally child protection needs to save children from being hurt and to protect them. And I think what we're too caught up with nowadays is how you go about maintaining relationships with their natural family, with the biological family. And that's really important and that can be balanced. But when you have in front of you the evidence that you have, I was a child protection worker and that was like basic child protection 101, is that if you have a baby who has an unexplained injury and an injury that is so serious as a broken leg, then the only course of action available to you is to take that child away and then to continue to do that investigation. So we've confused people, I think. The systems have confused people because we're focusing, I think, too much on supporting families and not on protecting children. And the system's balanced towards parents' rights and not enough towards children's rights. And until we get that balance right, until we balance back towards making sure the kids are safe, then we're going to see these sorts of scenarios play themselves out again.
Okay, one final question. You are the CEO of a foundation that is national. It's the Australian Childhood Foundation. Families SA repeatedly seems to be in the news and has been for many, many years. Would this have to be the worst state when it comes to the protection of children?
Oh, I think Families SA, there's a lot of states and territories, Kim, where child protection struggles. I think there's a whole range of issues that go into play. You know, the resources that are put into child protection aren't always as high as it should be. There aren't enough child protection workers. There's not enough early intervention and support for families when the struggles or when the problems begin to first emerge. And there's not enough support for kids who are protected in foster care. And so we see a whole range of kids suffering unneedlessly.
I know. And that, I mean, that's the broader issue. But it just floors me now living in South Australia. And even when I wasn't living in South Australia, Families SA always seemed to be in the news with regard to failings of looking after children.
South Australia hasn't had a good track record, I wouldn't say, Kim. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, really nice to catch up with you. I'm sorry it took us half an hour. Did we interrupt lunch or a walk along the beach?
No, I'm doing some work, so no interruption at all.
Excellent. Well, listen, lovely to chat to you, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again.
Thanks, Kim.